to Saga, slow news from a quiet island. This is Caitlin Meeks. Thanks for being here. Chapter 13, Night at the Landing Station, Location, Not the Island. Bude, Cornwall, the cable landing station above Widemouth Bay. February 2027, deep in the night. Talvin Jelfs had the kind of brain the night shift wasted, and he knew it, and he had made his peace with it the way you make peace with weather. The landing station above Widemouth Bay didn't need a brilliant man. It needed a present one. It needed someone to be there at 0314 when nothing was happening, in case the night was the one night something did. So he was there. Cotswolds raised all stone cottage patients, 29 and overqualified, for a job that was mostly the absence of a job. The cables came ashore below him, fat armored veins of glass carrying the better part of a continent's voice, and money up out of the Atlantic and into the racks that screamed on the other side of his office wall. His task was to watch the screens that watched the cables. Usually the screens showed nothing of importance, and he'd glance up from his laptop to watch them showing nothing of importance, night after night. Outside, the sea did the sea's slow work in the dark beyond the glass. The station was two rooms and a misunderstanding. From the road, it looked like an agricultural depot with unusually good fences, a long, windowless building in the grass above the dunes, nothing on it to announce that a measurable fraction of civilization came ashore under its floor. The trunks rose out of the beach manholes and came up through the raised floor into the hall. Cables thick as a wrist and armored like something you'd tow a ship with, each one splitting at its termination frame into its two lives. The glass, which carried the light. The copper, which carried the power. That was the part visitors never believed, back when there were visitors. The ocean floor is electrified. The station pushed 10,000 volts down every trunk to feed the amplifiers lying on the seabed every 70-odd kilometers, small sealed titanium hearts in the dark, each one catching the light as it faded and throwing it onward. Relay after relay, all the way to the far. Shore. The racks that did this work stood in rows in the hall. The power feed cabinets with their amber warning panels, the line terminals turning ocean light back into a continent's traffic, walls of winking green, the optical frames combed with yellow fiber in bundles so tidy they looked grown rather than installed. And over all of it, always, the fans. The fans were the weather of the hall, and the weather was Arctic. Racks that move that much light and power run hot, so the cooling never stopped. Air scrubbed and chilled and driven through the room hard enough to make your eyes water. A flat, furious, screaming roar, 40 units howling in agreement. A cold you dressed for and a noise you. War rather than heard. The hall held itself at a temperature meant for machines. New engineers came out of their first hour in it, looking like they'd walked out of winter surf. Talvin had stopped noticing it years ago, or not stopped, exactly, but moved it, the way people who live by the sea move the sea, from a sensation into a fact. His office sat against the hall's north wall, insulated down to a hum, and heated to a temperature meant for a person, with one long window of double glass looking into the racks, so a man at the desk could turn his chair and see the whole bright field of it winking at small. Green assurances. A pair of ear defenders hung on a peg by the connecting door, and a fleece hung under them. He was supposed to wear both in the hall, and mostly did. And there was the couch, older than any of the equipment, orange in a way nothing had been orange for decades, soft in the middle like a hammock that had given up. On slow nights, he napped on it with his boots off. Once, mid-nap, he dreamed he was on a ship, a great gray ship on an ocean with waves the size of terraced hillsides, the roar of the water everywhere, in the deck, in his chest, in his teeth, and he gripped the dream rail and looked for the horizon, and there wasn't one. He woke with his heart going and the roar still there. It was the fans, through the wall, doing what they always did, sounding like the whole Atlantic. He lay still for a long minute, listening to the machine ocean while the real one worked the dark 100 meters away, and thought, this is a strange place to be a person. Then he made tea. Tonight the sea was not slow. A storm had been building off the southwest for 2 days, one of the new storms, the ones the forecasters had stopped pretending to be calm about, and it threw rain against the windows in fistfuls. Somewhere out there, the water was higher than it should be. Everyone said so. Nobody said why, with any confidence, only that the ice had done something it wasn't supposed to do, and the gulf had something to do with heat coming up from below rather than down from the sun, and that the harbors down the line were sandbagging. Talvin let all of that stay outside, beyond the glass where the weather lived. Inside there was the hum, and the screens, and the squirrel. The squirrel was on his second monitor. Maisie Ardilla, forget-me-not, was nowhere near finished. He was playing an alpha, the kind of build with a save point that crashed if you sneezed at it, but it had its hooks in him all the way to the bone. You played a small detective in a coat, down in the lava tubes under a dead volcano, on a case that had started stupid and gone quietly enormous. Things were going missing from the town above. Not valuables, keepsakes. A widower's tin with a wedding ring in it. A swimming medal. A recipe card in a dead woman's handwriting. The town called it absent-mindedness. And then Maisie found the string, ordinary garden twine, tied in patient little knots, running off the back porch of the first house and down a crack in the earth. The crack became a tube. The tube became a labyrinth. So down you went, magnifying glass out, mapping tunnels that doubled back on themselves and opened only when you'd learned the trick of them, following knot after knot toward whoever was down there, gathering up the things a town had loved and failed to look at. Talvin played it like the detective he would have been in a fairer world. He kept case notes on paper, observed, suspected, tested, concluded, and he had deduced from the knot spacing alone that the thief wasn't hiding the keepsakes, but arranging them, somewhere deep, into something. He had written this up in a bug report that was not a bug report. And Alice had replied at 2 in the morning, her time, you beautiful bloodhound. Keep going. There was a mechanic where you could choose not to fight the things in the dark, and the game remembered every time you didn't. Somewhere below, he was fairly sure, string was being tied on his behalf. The story was Anna's. You could hear her in every line the little squirrel muttered to herself. The placeholder music was Anna, too, literally. Melodies hummed into a phone mic for a real score to replace someday, a voice very close and slightly embarrassed, la-ing where the strings would go. Talvin had threatened to riot if the Finnish game lost the humming. The engine underneath it all was Alice's, the Brainiac's code, tunnels that rearranged themselves without ever once dropping a knot. Anna had a little code in there, too, and you could always tell whose was whose. Alice's failed politely. Anna's failed with jokes in the error text. It made him feel things. He had it open in a window beside the live game, campfire, the dev server, where the three of them were arguing about a frog. G. Plasma, the frog NPC needs more frog. It is not enough frog. I will not be moved on this. Alice, it's 2800 polys. Gert, it's plenty of frogs, GP Lasma. 20, EIG800 is a suggestion of a frog's too. Anna, leave the frog alone, I wrote him sad backstory. He's earned the polys. Talvin, strong agree, justice for sad. Frog Anna, see, Talvin gets it. Talvin is our only friend, Alice. Talvin, you found another save crash, yet's Talvin. Found 3. One of them ate my whole run. I have never been happier, G. Plasma. Also, Anna, I can hear you typing about my frog. I am on. Your couch burst, Anna. Houseguests don't get frog veto power. It's in the lease. G. Purse, 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 purse. Purse, purse, purse. Purse, 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 purse. 3 more weeks, and I am home in Munich, where the sky stays outside. The house burst. Gert, you say that every visit and every visit you stay longer. He typed it and meant it. This was the warmest room he had. 3 people he had never met in the flesh, scattered across a coming-apart world, who had led a stranger from a Cornish cliff into the Alpha because he wrote good bug reports and laughed at the frog. Everywhere else, the too-muchness of him, the brain that ran on ahead, the way he felt things he couldn't quite defend out loud, was a thing to be managed, dialed down, apologized for. Here it was different. Nobody asked him to be smaller. Alice, the meticulous one, who fixed his crashes before he'd finished describing them. Gertrude, Munich at full volume even in text, camped that month on Anna's couch in the cloud forest to finish the frog, feuding with the fog, loudly counting the days until she flew home, somewhere between genius and a fire hazard. And Anna, who had moved out to one of the Canary Islands 5 months back and still couldn't stop talking about it. Anna, also, it's wild out here tonight. Wind off the volcano. The whole island sounds like it's breathing. Chalice, it's biblical here. Proper end of days. Anna, matching weather! Matching weather! Anna, I love it. I'm never coming back. Alice, no. Oh. Come back. 1. I miss you already. Anna, Alice, no, ooh. Come back here. Alice, we both know I ka-ah. Anna? Anna. Talvin, Berber, I'm gonna map one more tube before the world ends. He went back into the dark under the volcano, into the tunnels, and moved the little detective forward into a room he hadn't found before, a long throat of black rock. The music thinned out to almost nothing, the way it did when the game wanted you to feel watched. He nudged the squirrel forward. Beside the game, in the corner of his eye, the chat went on without him. This next stretch of it wasn't his, nobody's is, in somebody else's family. He read it anyway, the way you do. Anna, hey Al, serious minute, did you see the thing that came out of the State House Wednesdays, Alice? Oak 1, it's Alice, 5 letters, I picked every one of them. Anna, Alice, sorry, did you see it? Alice, I saw it, Anna, and? Alice, and? It's noise. Committee's gonna committee. My lawyer literally laughed. 1, Anna, mine didn't. That's half of why I'm here. Alice, you're there because you found a fern paradise with a volcano on it. Which? Valid. Anna, I'm here because the logs started smelling wrong 2 years ago. You're the one who taught me to trust the logs. I'm reading the logs, Alice, Alice. Boston is S-A-F-E. Bubble of bubbles. My whole life is here. The company. The game. My street knows me. Anna, seriously, honey, you should get out. Come here. We'll finish the game on a mountain, Alice. I waited 9 years for that green card. 9. If I leave now, it's gone, and they don't hand those back. Anna, it's paper, Alice. You are not paper, Dici. 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 Dici peachy. Dici. Flasma. Speaking as the German in the room, and I am sorry to always be her. It happened here. It can happen there. Everyone's neighbors felt safe until the Wednesday. They didn't DGP plasma, so keep a bag packed by the door. Passport, cash, chargers. Not because you will need it. So you can laugh at us later. Alice. Gert. Alice. Gert. Alice. Promise me the bag, Alice. Promise me the bag and I'll drop the whole thing tonight. In the tunnel, Talvin held the squirrel still at the mouth of the black room and watched the chat instead of the game and did not type, because there was nothing in Cornwall that was his to add. Alice's typing indicator came up, the 3 little dots that meant she was choosing her words with her whole heart. Then Campfire said, connecting. He glanced at it. The chat was gone, Alice's 3 dots and all, replaced by the little spinning ring. He frowned. Typed nothing, because there was nothing to type into. Connecting. The ring went around. Around. He alt-tabbed. Checked the connection. The station's link was a serious thing, redundant, not the sort of line that dropped because of weather. It had dropped. The first feeling wasn't alarm. It was loneliness. A small, stupid, private grief at being put out of the warm room, like a child sent up to bed mid-story. He thumbed at the trackpad to reconnect, and the ring kept turning, and somewhere underneath the loneliness, very quietly, something older woke up and said, "That line does not drop." Then the wall behind the loneliness lit orange. Not a metaphor. The monitoring screen, the one he was paid to watch, threw an alert across its top band in the color they used for attention required, and then another beneath it, and then it stopped behaving like a list and started behaving like rain. He read the first one, and it was almost reassuring in how it made sense. A break, close in the shallows below Widemouth, the cliff, the storm, the seabed, moving the way cliffs and seabeds did in weather like this. Cornwall eating its own cable. That happened. There were procedures for that. Then he turned his chair, because a feeling had arrived at the back of his neck before any thought arrived to justify it, and he looked through the long window into the hall. The field of green was gone. Amber was sweeping the racks in rows, panel after panel, the power feed cabinets strobing their warnings, the line terminals dropping their steady constellations and coming back wrong, and from the office it was all perfectly silent, a light storm behind double glass. He went through the connecting door and did not take the ear defenders off the peg and did not take the fleece. The hall took him the way winter surf takes you when you misjudge it, the noise and the cold arriving as one thing, the air moving hard enough to shove, the fans screaming the way they had always screamed, except that he was hearing them now, for the first time in years, because. Everything else about the hall had changed, and so nothing about it was allowed to be familiar. His breath came out white in the server light. He walked the center aisle between the racks with the alarms flashing amber off his hands and off the polished floor. A small man in a vast, bright, freezing, roaring room, every machine in it shouting light at him, and not one of them able to say a word. Then one of them found a way. Somewhere down the third row, a single alarm began, the grating, insistent beep of an uninterruptible power supply, discovering that its moment had come. A sound engineered by someone whose brief was make this impossible to ignore, and who had succeeded beyond all decency. A minute later, two more joined it from different rows, out of phase, beeping across each other like ships in fog. Then the cascade found its rhythm, and there were eight of them, eight rack-mounted machines screaming at him at once in flat electronic panic, each one certain it was the only one with news. At the fault locator he stopped, hugging his own arms, and watched the station do the one thing it could still do, which was measure precisely where it was bleeding. The locator fired light down each broken trunk and timed the echo that came back off the break, the way you time a shout against a canyon wall, and printed the answer as a distance. 90 kilometers. The storm, fine. 640, harder to say. 2,900. 3,200. The distances arrived one after another like depth soundings from a ship sailing somewhere no chart admitted existed, and under it all the fans roared on, indifferent, and for one unmoored second he was back on the dream ship, the ocean in his teeth, no horizon anywhere. Except this time, the ocean was real, and it was out there in the dark, cutting the world's voice, one cable at a time, and he was the only soul aboard. He went back into the office and shut the connecting door. The quiet of it was worse than the noise. The warmth of it was worse than the cold. It was the others that didn't make sense. They were blooming far out, hundreds, and then thousands of kilometers offshore, on systems that had nothing to do with each other and nothing to do with the storm, faults appearing on lines that ran to places the storm could not reach, all of them within minutes, as if something very large had drawn a hand across the floor of the ocean. He sat very still and watched a continent's worth of glass go dark on a map, lit fault by fault, and understood, in the cold, complete way his wasted brain understood things, that he was not watching a Cornish cliff fall into the sea. He was watching the lines being cut. All of them, at once. On the wall to his left, taped there years ago by someone who thought ahead, was a laminated sheet curling at the corners. Escalation, Wes, 2 to call. A column of names and numbers, the network's nervous system written out in marker, because someone had once been wise enough not to trust it all to the cables. He took down the phone and called the first name. It rang twice and gave him nothing, not a voice, not a machine, just the flat patient. Nothing of a line that had stopped being a line. He called the second name. Nothing. He went down the list, the way the detective went down the tube, one room at a time, into the dark, and the laminated sheet died under his finger, one name at a time, and outside the storm through the sea against the cliff that was already coming apart, and on his second monitor, the. Little squirrel in its coat stood frozen at the mouth of a black throat of rock, waiting in a world the player had walked away from to be remembered. Talvin put down the phone. The room hummed. The screens watched. There was no one left to call, and no line left to call them on, and a brilliant man the night shift had wasted sat alone above the Atlantic, at the exact center of everything, the one person who understood precisely what was happening, and the one person who could no longer. Tell a soul. You've been listening to Nivaria. I'm Caitlin Meeks. Thanks for keeping me company. Look after each other. Look after yourself. And I'll see you in the cloud forest. A few words for the curious. English throughout, for once, this is the only installment set entirely off the island. Boudé and Widemouth Bay are real, and so is the landing station. The North Cornwall coast is one of the places the transatlantic internet actually came ashore, fat cables buried under an unremarkable beach. Campfire, the private dev chat server where the Maisie games were built. Three people and, eventually, one stranger from a Cornish cliff who wrote good bug reports. Maisie Ardilla, Forget Me Not, the first graphical Maisie game, and the one that never shipped. Anna wrote the case and hummed every placeholder melody herself. Alice built the engine. The release games were text only. The Alpha died with the cables, mid-tunnel, waiting to be remembered. GPL Esma, the artist's handle. Installment 3's listeners have seen it before, painted on the lid of an old game. A game by Alice, Plasma G, and Anna. The laminated sheet escalation lists lived on paper because somebody, once, was wise enough not to trust the phone numbers to the same cables they were meant to rescue. The trunks and the power feed, at the wall of a landing station, each cable splits into glass and copper. The glass carries the light, and the copper carries 10,000 volts, pushed down the line to feed the amplifiers that lie on the seabed every 70-odd kilometers, catching the signal as it fades and throwing it on toward the far shore. The ocean floor was electrified. Almost nobody ever thought about it. The fault locator, you can ask a broken cable where it hurts, fire light down the glass and time the echo off the break like a shout against a canyon wall. Icy. On the last night, the answers came back like depth soundings. The cold server halls are kept at temperatures meant for machines, air conditioning at full blast around the clock, which is why the one warm thing in the building was a person.